from KQED.
This is the California Report podcast. Good morning. I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm John Sepulveda. We are seeing a marked increase of drug overdose deaths in Southern California. This includes 5 overdoses, although not all were fatal, involving drug users who ingested cocaine laced with fentanyl in San Diego County. Now, the overall numbers are hazy on how many overdoses are happening, in large part because these overdoses are from party drugs, and many people don't understand what's happening to them. I spoke with San Diego DA Summer Steffen in her office last week about these overdoses.
We had 5 people that ended up in the hospital. 3 died of overdose of cocaine laced with fentanyl, and 2 were, you know, in terrible condition in the hospital but survived. What's unusual is our 5 victims, if you will, of this overdose situation, they were between the ages of 30 and 47. You know, they had regular jobs. They were everybody's neighbor, basically.
One of the things we're seeing in San Diego is an incredible hub of fentanyl, whether it's sent in from China per congressional reports, or whether it crosses the border illegally just south here near San Ysidro and Otay Mesa. You were talking about everyone's neighbor. Mary Sessom, who's the former mayor of Lemon Grove, her daughter, Anna Baker, was arrested in one of the largest fentanyl busts in history, actually, right here in East County, San Diego. What can be done to kind of curb the amount of fentanyl trafficking we're seeing in San Diego County?
We're seeing a lot of fentanyl trafficking, and one really disturbing trend that's not talked about as much is young people, juveniles, you know, ages 15, 16, 17.
You're seeing juveniles traffic fentanyl.
Traffic fentanyl. So, you know, cartels and drug dealers are convincing them that for $1,000, easy money, you can just transport this fentanyl. And because it can be carried, a very small amount is sufficient to be sold, you know, across the market. We're seeing a lot of kids, really. We are very concerned about this trend. We went as far as to start to pick out the high schools where the most recruitment is going on for this activity and to bring educational programs to that school.
That was San Diego District Attorney Summer Steffen, and we're going to hear more about these kids essentially transporting fentanyl, Lily. I was really shocked by this. I was like, minors? And to clarify, some of the kids actually live in Tijuana and they go to San Diego. Some of the kids are in San Diego and they're transferring it within the county.
I was also struck by, first of all, great interview there.
Thanks.
Struck by how this is now affecting the kids of prominent people that are tasked with dealing with this. Mm. And I wonder if you have any sense of, is that changing, you know, the will to do something about this? Is it sparking any sort of action that might not have otherwise been there?
Yeah, so there's, I think what you're hinting at is basically because wealthy white folks are being hit with this, we might be looking at it differently, if I can say it bluntly.
In a word, yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think the answer is yeah. I think there definitely seems to be more sensitivity around the issue. We just heard from the district attorney they're not prosecuting these kids. They're trying to reach them before they begin selling, and then afterwards they're treated as juveniles. I think it's really important to note that this marks a stark difference than the drug policy of even 25 years ago when we saw people being locked up for very similar things. Part of that could be because of the economic and racial identities of these children. I think part of it, though, too, is that there, you know, Summer Steffen, not just on this issue, but on a lot of different issues, she has really kind of become a progressive voice for, you know, bail reform, minimum sentencing. She is not, even though she's a Republican, she is not one of those, you know, tough on crime, so to speak, Republicans. So it's been interesting to watch her kind of develop a different strategy. Other thing that I found really interesting is, and this might be, you know, one of the state's biggest power couples that no one knows, Summer Steffen is married to Judge Dana Sabra, who oversaw the, who still oversees the family separation case in San Diego.
I had
federal.
No idea.
Yeah. So, and he too is considered to be a rather progressive Republican, so to speak, on issues of immigration.
Well, on that topic, a different federal judge, not Dana Sabra, but Dolly G in Los Angeles, has appointed an independent monitor to ensure the government provides humane and safe treatment of migrant children in its care. KQED's Julie Small reports.
U.S. District Judge Dolly G oversees a decades-old settlement that requires detained children to be transferred promptly to licensed child care facilities or released to a relative or sponsor. In a court order, G wrote appointment of a special master was warranted given recent court findings that the government has repeatedly violated the terms of the Flores settlement agreement. Los Angeles lawyer Andrea Sheridan Orden, a former U.S. attorney, will serve as a special master for at least a year, starting October 17th. Orden will be empowered to address complaints that some kids have been held in filthy, overcrowded border facilities and others have been given psychotropic drugs without proper consent. For the California Report, I'm Julie Small.
All right, let's talk politics now. Central California Congressman Devin Nunes is planning to make the rounds in Visalia for a fundraiser tomorrow. This comes after he sent around a magazine, a 38-page magazine, accusing the congressman's local newspaper, the Fresno Bee, of slander. Have you seen this magazine?
I have not.
You are going to see it, though, because you're going to the Central Valley.
I am. And is there a link to our website, John?
I think so. If you go to calreport.org, you can see it. In the meantime, here's KQED's Alex Hall on this incredible piece of postage.
The magazine's cover shows cartoon bees drunk on Kool-Aid aboard a ship that's about to sink. Inside, the bees' staff are discredited as unethical and unprofessional. When Fresno resident Lisa Bryant got hers in the mail last weekend, she thought,
maybe it was, you know, how you get advertisements in the mail or regional magazines or something. And then I started looking through it and I was like, oh, this is very interesting.
Bryant is an assistant professor of political science at Fresno State University. She studied campaign materials like this from around the country.
Usually when we see negative mailers, we see, you know, a single 8.5 by 11 kind of two-sided postcard. So to think how much this must have cost the campaign and how much effort was put into it, it's pretty impressive.
This isn't the first sign of tension between Nunes and Fresno's paper. In May, the Bee wrote about a lawsuit against a winery that Nunes invests in. The suit alleged the company held a fundraiser on a yacht involving illicit drugs and prostitution. Nunes wasn't there, but 2 months later, the congressman released this campaign ad.
The Bee's reporting is a textbook example of fake news.
Here's what Fresno Bee editor Joe Keita says.
That mailer was filled with a bunch of inaccurate statements about the work that we did.
Keita says the Bee is not at war with Nunes. In fact, the paper's editorial board has endorsed the congressman in every election since 2002.
What is unusual is you have a member of Congress here who is attacking the news media instead of his opponent.
In response to claims that the magazine contains false information, Nunes's campaign chairman, Bob Smitkamp, told KQED the Fresno Bee's editor is, quote, entitled to his opinion. For the California Report, I'm Alex Hall in Fresno.
And after Alex filed that piece for us, we found out that the Fresno Bee, for the first time, has not endorsed Devin Nunes this go-around. Big changes in the Central Valley.
Absolutely. And John, you know well that I am a chronic interrupter. And of course, I interrupted you as you were saying that I am on my way to the Central Valley tomorrow. There's going to be a fundraiser being held for Devin Nunes in Visalia. Jason Chaffetz is going to be their former Republican congressman.
Now he's
Utah.
A Fox News host.
Now a Fox News host. So it'll be interesting. We're going to see if we can, A, get in, B, talk to either of them. But really, most importantly, talk to constituents about how they feel about this race. We're just 4 weeks away now.
That's right. And speaking of Fox News, this is a complete aside before we get to our next story. You heard Hope Hicks is the former White House communication director for President Trump, mm-hmm. is moving to Los Angeles, where she's going to head communications for Fox News and Rupert Murdoch.
I did not.
Yes. A little bit of California news so far.
Wow.
I'm just breaking it all over the place here.
All right. Thanks for that, John. Let's go now to Merced County, where 2 years ago, the local district attorney did what's almost unheard of in small communities across the state. He charged two prominent local leaders with bribery. But as Brian Kranz with the investigative reporting program at UC Berkeley found, cracking down on political corruption isn't so easy.
Okay. Thank you all for being here. Earlier today, following a 10-month investigation.
Merced County District Attorney Larry Morse stunned the Central Valley community in 2016 when he announced criminal charges against a prominent developer and the former Los Banos mayor. They allegedly bribed their way into expensive school construction contracts. It's one of the first public corruption cases the DA can recall from his quarter century working in the office. The evidence seems pretty strong.
Hey, man. I'm okay. How about yourself, man?
Hours of secretly recorded conversations allegedly captured developer Greg Opinski and former mayor Tommy Jones bribing a Los Banos school board trustee who was recording those conversations. In one recording, the cooperating witness, Dominic Falasco, allegedly tells Jones the size of the bribe he'll need.
$5,000.
Okay.
$10,000.
Okay, you got it. Okay.
So get that to Greg tomorrow. I need something before I do anything,
I
think, okay?
And yet the case is crumbling. The accused say they're innocent. They hired some big-name Central Valley defense attorneys who are alleging their clients are actually whistleblowers who were set up. They just managed to get the trial date pushed back, saying the recordings are incomplete and maybe even doctored. It's now scheduled for March of next year. And then there's the government's star witness, Dominic Falasco.
This is Action News, live at 11.
He was the school board trustee who secretly recorded conversations for prosecutors. But while he was doing that...
In the North Valley tonight, a well-known defense attorney and school board member has been arrested on drug charges.
In April 2016, Falasco was arrested for meth possession. More recently, he's been accused of soliciting sex from a client's girlfriend, all of which suggests the only public corruption case under Merced County District Attorney Larry Morse is in trouble. Not that Morse will be around for the end anyway. The longtime DA was just voted out of office in the wake of a Me Too scandal. The incoming DA didn't respond to a request for comment. For the California Report, I'm Brian Kranz in Los Banos.
Well, with just over a month until the midterm elections, YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter continue to struggle with propaganda on their sites. And in fact, a new study about Twitter finds that many of the problems during the 2016 election still exist today. Here's KQED's Sam Harnett.
The Knight Foundation-funded study found that 80% of Twitter accounts spreading misinformation in 2016 are still up and running. Vladimir Barish co-produced the study. He says most of the misinformation flowing through Twitter can be traced to just 10 websites. Their articles are linked on Twitter, retweeted by armies of robot accounts, and then retweeted by humans who agree with the content.
This is an ongoing phenomenon, that this did not stop with the 2016 election, that this is not going to stop with the midterms.
In response, Twitter says the study does not reflect the work it's done to remove robot accounts and suspend users, like conspiracy theorist Alex Jones. But Salome Filyun, who researches the internet and society at Harvard, says these fixes can only go so deep because of how content is created by users on websites like Twitter and Facebook. Misinformation is baked into the structure.
To do anything about these sorts of things would require fundamentally reimagining the role of these platforms or the way that they're designed basically from the ground up. So, you know, that seems like a tall order.
That, Filyun says, would probably require regulation from the outside. For the California Report, I'm Sam Harnett.
Okay, John, so listen to this. Kids in preschool are three times as likely to be expelled than those in K through 12. Governor Brown recently signed into law a measure that aims to keep those little guys in class by helping preschools hire mental health consultants. Here's KQED's April Domboski.
Picture a playground with a sandbox and a jungle gym and a gaggle of four-year-olds running around. One kid, Jackson, is the one who's always getting in trouble.
He'd be riding the tricycle or the bicycle and would just ride it into another kid.
Family therapist Tina Sloan says other parents complained about Jackson. For a lot of schools, expelling him would be the easiest way to deal with the problem. But instead, Sloan's team of therapists stepped in.
With kiddos like Jackson, their behavior is communicating something that's unique to them. That's our job, is to be the detective and really trying to understand, for this child, what does this behavior mean?
They talked to Jackson's parents, visited him at home, and observed him in the classroom. And they realized when Jackson pushed his classmates at circle time, it was because he wanted to be included. Sloan says instead of punishing him, they taught him the skills to stay calm and get the attention he wanted.
it could be giving him the words to say, oh, you really want to play with Sarah. So what if we ask her if you could play together?
The new law gives preschools extra money to hire mental health clinicians so kids like Jackson can get the support they need to stay in school. For the California Report, I'm April Dymbosky.
Well, finally, today is Monday, October 8th, and of course, this marks 1 year since the North Bay wildfires erupted in California's wine country. The Tubbs Fire alone destroyed more than 5,000 homes and buildings and killed 22 people. KQED's Hope McKinney brings us the story of one man who is not spending his time rebuilding his own house, but helping others rebuild theirs.
Len Mirabella and his wife were woken up by the fire alarm and a neighbor pounding on their door saying the fire was coming down their street in Santa Rosa. So they grabbed a few belongings and left.
Out of 70 houses, strangely, seven were standing, but our house was flattened to about a height of about 2 feet. And so we lost everything at that point.
Mirabella says he regrets leaving behind their wedding album and the art quilts his wife made that decorated the walls of their house.
We took just minimal things, a couple laptops, my wife's medication, a box of papers, that's it.
Now, a year later, they've decided not to rebuild their home, moving to a nearby community instead. Mirabella made this decision so he'd have time to focus on helping people from vulnerable communities who are affected by the fires. It's his job. Mirabella is executive director of Catholic Charities in Santa Rosa. Helping people get housed is one of the many things they do.
There's so many people that are stuck, so many people trying to figure it out.
After the fires, money poured into the nonprofit. They received over $5 million to build a new shelter and affordable housing in Santa Rosa. Mirabella and his wife say they feel fortunate.
And I remember in those first few days, my wife and I looked at each other and said, gee, all that we have is now in a little bag here. And that image of everything you've got in a bag reminds you of the people that we serve, that that's their life every day.
Mirabella and his staff will be building a hope tree today with wishes for the community written on its leaves as a way to mark the anniversary of the fires. For the California Report, I'm Hope McKinney.
Support for the California Report comes from Block Construction, a builder committed to enhancing communities in the Bay Area and Central Coast. BLACH.com, Block Construction, together building greatness. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
And that's the California Report for Monday, October 8th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulveda.
And I'm Lily Jamali. Have a great day.